podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you to reduce unnecessary fertilizer application and help clean up our lakes with CA's free lawn soil test analysis. You can pick up your soil sample bags at your village community association. For more information, call CA's watershed manager, John McCoy, at 410-312-6336.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Harrod County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Joan Lankos, a longtime community activist and self-proclaimed land use junkie.
I'm an advocate.
She doesn't like
activist. I don't like the term advocate. It sounds like I'm a nasty person. Advocate means that I'm working for the community.
You're helping our community.
I kind of like the activist thing, though, but advocate works.
Well, let's come back to that.
Okay.
In the meantime, why don't you tell me what kind of news we got going on in Howard County?
It's a crime on the stem in Howard County.
You know what? I'm thinking about moving to Baltimore City. I'm so scared.
I know. Can you believe it? People are actually saying stuff like that. I mean, look, it was tragic. The shooting last night in Ellicott City at St. Peter's Episcopal Church. It's sad. I mean, somebody, it looks like it was kind of a, I don't know, I'd say domestic, but, you know, contained within a small group of people. It wasn't random.
And I don't know the statistics, but, you know, people are freaking out. I'm not going back to my house until they solve this murder. You know what? I don't know what the number is, but like 90%, I think, of murders or crimes are committed between people that know one another. It's domestic. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a very high number.
I mean, it happens.
I don't know exactly what the number is.
It really
is,
happens anywhere, but it's news when it happens in Ellicott City, though. I mean, that's the thing, you know, because these things don't happen out here in wonderful, the rarefied earth of Howard County. We just don't have these.
The prima donna county that we are. You know what?
Jim Rouse did not include crime as part of what he planned for this.
This wasn't a part of his vision?
No.
But you know what I love, though? And we commented on that lunch. I bet you they had every piece of high-tech cop equipment the county owns was out and deployed. They got to use it finally. You know, I mean, they don't get to use a lot of the stuff they have, but I bet
they probably had to jumpstart the batteries because they were dead because they haven't used in so long. Howard County SWAT team, activate, you know.
You know, it's so big. I drove by there this morning coming back from Catonsville when I came down through Ellicott City, and there's it's still news. I mean,
why don't we tell what it is? Because
there was a shooting at St. Peter's Episcopal Church. Two women were shot, and one was killed. One's still in critical condition, I think. Mm-hmm. And then a little while later, after the police arrived, a custodian discovered the two women. I think one was an assistant pastor or anyway, they both worked in the church. Custodian discovered the bodies at about 5:30. And then shortly thereafter, they discovered a third body of a man who apparently is self-inflicted gunshot wound, dead in the woods very close by. You got to figure it's related. Now,
can you imagine if it wasn't? We have a murder at the church, and we have a murder in the woods.
Oh,
down
my God.
The road. I mean,
overload.
My God.
And
overload.
All within a half a mile of police headquarters.
Yeah, I know, right down the street from police headquarters. But the worst part of it, think about it. It happened at 5:20 in the afternoon. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to drive through Ellicott City between 5 and 6 o'clock. It's the worst. I mean, you know, it's bumper to bumper, moves very slowly, and I'm sure they closed off a lot of roads last night. I imagine there were some people last night who go, what the heck is going on in Ellicott City?
Right here at the mall, yesterday as well, the fire engines were called to duty.
So I'm sitting in a continuing ed class out at the airport yesterday, and it's dreadfully boring, and I get a little light shines on my my phone.
Was it a tweet?
No, it was an email from our guest who sends me, there was a fire at the mall. I had two pictures, which I eventually put up on my blog. But it was big news. I mean,
you talk about all the equipment that Howard County has. I was here at about 7:15 to do my twice-weekly walk with my friend, and there were at least 15 pieces of equipment, including one that has Homeland Security on the side that had no other markings within Howard County Fire Department Homeland Security, and I'm like, I finally went up to a firefighter. What
shovel
is that?
Shovel-ready money, baby. That's what it was.
Apparently, it was the shower. Apparently, it was the it's a shower in case they have to decontaminate, and you'll be happy to know that Howard County did not go for the heated water heater. In the shower.
So it's a cold shower.
Yes, he was very specific to tell me that the showers were cold.
Well, they could use that after wine in the woods.
but I do.
Exactly.
Good one. I do understand. This is a huge structure, and they didn't know what the scope of the fire was. And obviously, you need to mobilize as many as you can, because if it had been a significant fire within the main purview of Sears, that could have taken down a significant portion of the mall.
Yes.
Yeah, it really could have. You know, and
I get that.
What we understand is started in a trailer at the loading dock. But the worst part is that smoke gets vented through the store, and I can imagine there's quite a bit of damage in there as a result of that, just from merchandise. And Sears is still closed, but you saw a sign on the door?
I saw a sign on the door that says that it will open at 10 a.m. on Saturday.
On Saturday, which is tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Okay, well.
Special on smoking jackets.
You know, we're talking about, we have another crime story in the news today. There was yet another prostitution sting down in North Laurel. Okay.
Unreal.
But ordinarily that wouldn't even make it through our list of stories that we, because it happens so often. I mean, it seems like every.
Well, but not here in Howard County. It happens in other counties.
Well, this is Howard County Police. This is North.
No, I understand, but that kind of stuff doesn't happen here.
In Laurel, it does. Yeah, in Laurel. I mean,
I'm out of here.
I'm telling you, for over the past year, there's been at least six of these stings down in North Laurel, and which is funny because what's funny, and I give Tom Cole credit for his blog, Hoko Rising, who pointed this out, is that. Also, the news this week was the Secret Service is coming to Howard County for a
training session.
A training session on ethics, and they're having it in Laurel.
As it relates to the prostitution, I think, right?
I think it's probably a pretty good place for them. It's a good laboratory for that.
Well, moving from sex to alcohol.
Oh, but I was going to talk before we got into that, but we were talking about fires. I want to talk about the fire tax.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the fire tax, which was, fire chief kind of didn't make his boss look real good. You know, Ken put in for an increase in the fire tax of 17.6 cents per $100 of assessed value.
I think that was another shooting at the mall.
Great. One of our fans. And the fire chief came right out and said it should have been larger.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's not going to win him any friends out in the western part of the county.
Now, what justification was there for that request?
I learned something I didn't know. Apparently, that right now in Howard County, each fire truck is only staffed with three firefighters. Okay? When they arrive at a burning structure.
At a fire.
According to this article by Lindsay McPherson, good old Lindsay McPherson, that there is a national rule that says that when you arrive at a burning structure, two firefighters must go into the structure together, and two must be outside. So if you've only had three firefighters on a truck,
so you got to bring a second truck bring one more person.
And that's what the fire chief says. So that means that two trucks have to go. Well, first of all, if it's a fire, wouldn't you have more than one truck anyway?
You know what? If the fire department was run by the private sector, that would never happen.
Well, you would say you'd grab a guy from another truck, saying rather than take two trucks, why don't you just hop on our truck and
catch a ride?
It's a ride. But no, we're getting a larger than increase. But you want to go to the liquor store.
Well, I always want to go to the liquor store.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places. It's like church.
So the liquor store that you and I would like to go to is the liquor store that's being contemplated on the upper level of the new Wegman store, which is opening up on June 14th.
Yeah.
And, you know, Maryland law doesn't allow grocery stores to sell beer, wine, and even hard liquor like it is in some other states.
We have some of the worst liquor laws.
It's unreal.
You know, it's just like
it's the liquor lobby. I mean, they don't want grocers competing with liquor stores.
I wonder, and Joan, you know some historical. Is this one of the Puritan results of our? We had a very religious legacy in this state. And we were founded as kind of.
I wasn't here in the 1600s.
But yeah, I thought you would kind of know that you're into those kind of historical important things, land use. And, no.
We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that anyway. So, yeah.
So, anyhow, there's a group that is looking to try to put a liquor store on the second floor, I guess, of
Wegmans.
Wegmans structure.
The new Wegmans, yeah.
But it would be a separate entity.
Yeah.
And they're trying to obviously skirt the law and have a liquor store within the purview of Wegmans. And they went forward on their liquor license hearing this past week. Yeah. And you were there, actually.
Yeah.
And it was nothing short of a little bit of a debacle, I hear.
Well, you know, first of all, this guy, Mike Smith, who is the... Now, correct me, counselor, you know the law, that a licensee...
First he put you on the spot, Joe. Now he's going to put me on the spot.
Any licensee has to be a resident of Howard County, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, the resident, yeah. It has to be a resident agent. It has to be a resident of Howard County.
So to do that, the backers of this liquor store got this guy, Mike Smith, to be a 10% owner, and he's the one that presented himself at the hearing the other night in front of the hearing board.
But he doesn't know a thing about the store.
He was clueless. I mean, he was the most unprepared. And this guy's a lawyer. They killed him on the witness stand. I mean, now, a lot of the questions were, you know, are they germane to the guy's argument for his license? Probably not, but boy,
my guess is the questions were probably not germane, and they were intended to make him look bad.
And they did a very good job.
Discredit him, though they really have nothing to do with the fact. The fact that you're a 10% owner doesn't mean you're required to know the budget of the liquor store. It doesn't mean you have to know what the name of it is if it hasn't yet been picked. What's the process? And maybe there are things that they just didn't want to yet disclose.
And I hear that, but, you know, not know the budget. But this guy, they even asked him, well, how much money do you think the store is going to need? He said, well, it's probably more than $10,000. And you could hear the other liquor store owners in the audience just start laughing. You know, this guy knew nothing about a liquor store.
You know, I've learned with cases as an attorney to never stand in judgment of how a case went without knowing the side of the story.
Yeah.
But at first blush, it does clearly appear that counsel for this group didn't adequately prepare their witness, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, the man was very poorly prepared. And like I said, I would like to see the liquor store there, but this guy, he didn't help his cause at all that night. So I think if Wegmans wants the store, or Chris O'Donnell, who is the husband of the president of Wegmans, is the 90% owner of the store, if he really wants it, then he'll show up at that next hearing and make everybody feel better. Because really what these hearings are about is to make the public feel good about who they're entrusting this license with. And, you know, Mike seems like a nice guy, but...
And look, maybe we do this on another show and actually have Ms. King, the liquor license administrator, on the show to talk a little bit about this. Because the liquor license laws are really so archaic, and they really are not consumer-friendly. And they're really not in support of capitalism and competition. They create a monopoly type
monopolistic.
Thank you. Environment.
Yeah, they do, and that's what all the liquor store owners there, or not the ones that showed up, and there were a lot. I mean, they outnumbered supporters of the store. Existing liquor store owners in Howard County don't want to see this. They don't want competition. It's an anti-consumer stance. I mean, that's why we pay higher prices. That's we have some really kind of
hole in the wall kind of places.
Marginal liquor stores in this county, only because they can, because it's a closed market because of the way
it's
this
no competition.
They think this license comes with an exclusive marketing territory. It doesn't, and it shouldn't be that way. Anyway, my favorite town of Howard County is back in the news again. Elk Ridge.
I don't know if it's your favorite town or you are that town's favorite blogger.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't say favorite blogger. I probably favorite target. I would imagine. I like Elk Ridge. I'm down there all the time, but it's always a good source of stories. And this week, people from Elk Ridge breathed a collective sigh of relief.
Well, not yet, but...
Well, sort of. Yeah, right, because they're suspicious of it. But, Elk Ridge is considered one of the prime candidates for this CSX intermodal terminal. And as it turns out, and they don't want it. They don't want it anywhere near it. And as it turns out, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, the mayor of Baltimore, wants it. And she's come right out. She sent a letter to the president of CSX saying, located in the city.
You know what? The article talked about this, a couple points. First of all, don't you think that if that was the logical place for CSX to want to put it, they would have identified that location? I mean, as a business, you don't locate where you're invited. You locate where you have the best location, where you get the best tax breaks from the county. There are a lot of factors that go into it.
There are a lot of factors.
It's more than just being invited by the mayor of Baltimore City. And that's why I'm skeptical that this is really going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to go anywhere or not. And Ken kept his options open, saying that, you know, we'll stand by to work with them. I mean, he didn't say that it's out of Howard County for good.
Well, it's a tough thing for a politician, because on the one hand, you want to bring in the jobs. You want to bring in
the tax base. Yeah.
On the other hand, there's so much opposition
from a
political perspective that, you know what, I get how they're kind of walking that tightrope.
Yeah, it's not easy. But, you know, and CSX is already a big corporate citizen in Howard County. A lot of people don't realize that. But they have an automotive terminal in Jessup that is huge.
Right.
So they're already they already pay the county a lot of money in property taxes. So I'm sure that there some of the folks in Elk Ridge are heartened by that. This isn't a big story, but it's a funny story. We talked about the guy in Elkridge, or the woman in Elkridge, was found. She was missing. Went missing. What, 20 years ago?
Yeah, and then she was found underneath her.
Yeah, in the shed in the backyard.
Buried
because,
in concrete.
Because his current estranged wife finally allowed detectives to go take a look. Well, now it's been announced this week that she's filed for divorce.
She's getting out while she can.
Saw that one coming. What else we got?
Let's see. On the political front, a couple things. Ellicott City resident John Weinstein. Yeah. I think you were actually at this fundraiser.
I went to John's fundraiser last Saturday.
He has started the next cycle of fundraising events. He's not.
Now, we should say who John is. I mean, he ran against Warren Miller and Gail Bates.
Correct.
For the
District 9. Joan, help me.
Or was it just 9 at that point?
9.
I don't know. But anyway,
he ran for office.
House of Delegates in the last election. He lost.
He was another one of those guys that tried to run for something and lost. That'll do.
He was a Democrat running in a heavily Repub district. And, it was an uphill battle. But then, thanks to the gods of redistricting, there's now 9 has been cut in half, correct, John?
Yes, 9A, 9B.
9A, 9B. And 9A looks pretty comfortable looks pretty competitive. Let's put it that way.
For a Democrat.
For a Democrat.
Yeah. And he's keeping his options
open.
I don't think it's
a slam dunk. Because it's that Council District 1, too. It's that Ellicott City, Columbia, so it's got a good Republican.
And those Democrats can't always be counted to vote Democratic in that district.
No.
They actually might consider the candidate.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Rather than blindly following
God
the party
bless
line.
Them. Yeah. God bless them. Anyway, so he had a fundraiser.
He had a fundraiser.
You were at that. It was actually interesting. It was well attended by current elected officials.
Yeah, Guy Gazzone was there. Calvin Ball.
Courtney Watson. Ellen Flynn Giles.
Ellen Flynn Giles. A lot of us went thinking that John was going to make an announcement that he was going to run for the seat, because there are some local political wags, like myself, who thought that this district was kind of custom designed for John. But turns out John is also kind of looking an eye as if Courtney goes for county exec. I should say if when Courtney goes for county exec, is there anybody in this county that doubts that Courtney Watson is going to run for county exec?
Did you know Whole Foods was looking at that GGP building?
Exactly. So, Courtney Watson runs for county exec.
Another well-kept secret.
I think John would like to go, or he's strongly considering going for that seat instead, going for county council. So, he has this fundraiser, says, I need money. I don't know what I'm running for, but I need money. But the most interesting thing to me was, at the end, as he's telling everybody, thank you for coming, and thanks for giving me this money, and I'm going to run for something. I don't know what it is, but when I decide what I'm going to run for, I'm going to announce it on.
And then there's that.
Yay!
Yeah, I thought that was fun.
For all 7 of our listeners.
He might need a little more coverage out of you. I hope he's going to elect him. But.
Well, so what's interesting is, and it'll be a fun show to do somewhere down the road, is who are the participants in the next class of elected officials?
Who are?
Because you have people like Brian Meshkin. We've talked about him considerably.
Does he have political ambitions?
I think he's got political ambitions.
And, being sued? Didn't I just read?
Well, we were just actually going
to
just talk about that. So he is...
The amazing Meshkin
is still renting, as I understand it, in Maple Lawn, because he is keeping his options open. I think he wants
to see... Should we explain who he is for the school board member?
Brian Meshkin is a school board member. We've talked about him extensively on the show.
He saved Howard County multiple times.
He saved Howard County.
He has actually saved both coasts.
Oh,
yes.
He has saved people on the West Coast. Then he flew across the country, and now he's saving people on the East Coast. So we're blessed to have Brian Meshkin.
He's an extremely successful entrepreneur of companies that haven't made any money.
And some of which are arguably defunct and have no stockholders. Anyway.
And now one of his...
So he actually started a venture with well-known business leader in this community, Steve Adler.
Former candidate for county executive.
Yes. Exactly right.
And, Republican candidate for county
executive. Proprietor over at Savage Mill. And, Dennis, what was the name of the venture fund?
Rapid Venture.
And it was going to be sort of an incubator.
Or Venture Rapids or something like that.
It was going to be an incubator to try to give businesses a start. And I think they were looking to get a nonprofit board in place. They were looking to raise some capital.
This was a year ago.
It was about a year ago.
Yeah. Last April.
And actually, my firm got approached to help and participate. And I'm not sure if it went anywhere or not. Litigation that Joan is referring to answers that question, because Steve Adler has filed a lawsuit against Brian Meshkin for $3,000.
That seems like a really small amount of money.
Well, we were talking about that over lunch.
Exact point.
I don't think it's about the money.
I don't think it's about the money. I think it's about you really pissed me off.
I'm going to show you.
So I think that marriage is over. Mr. Adler and Mr.
Yes,
Meshkin?
Yes, I think it is. And
Does this hurt Meshkin's future political?
I don't know. It all depends how much you want to talk about it and how much you want to write about it and how much we can get Tom to write about it.
Exactly. Exactly. On his radar, it has no effect.
Look, in my personal belief is that all this extraneous stuff that people try to use to discredit candidates, it backfires. It doesn't go anywhere.
It raises the name recognition.
What is it? All news is good news?
As long as you spell my name right. I mean, right. There's a lot to be said about that.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, people sit, they get in that voting booth, they go, I heard of that guy before.
Right.
Alan Dyer. Yeah, I've heard of him before.
I'll vote for him.
Next thing you know.
Before you know, you're going to have write-ins, and, you know, you're not even going to be running for anything.
And it's funny. I made a comment to Tom. Tom Ault was also at John Weinstein's fundraiser. And I made a comment. I'm going to miss Alan Dyer. Because when I went back and I was writing, actually, I mentioned him in my column in the Business Month of this month. It's kind of in the scheme of things about elections and how you solve political problems by elections.
I read your column in the Business Monthly this month. I thought it was excellent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. But you saw that I wrote about it. Well, as I was writing that, I went back to see how many times I've written about Alan Dyer in my blog.
A lot. But the beautiful thing is that there will be people that will screw up.
There's always another Alan
Dyer.
And
they will create stories for you.
Yeah.
They will.
There's always another Alan Dyer.
And I'll send you a little email to tell you in case you missed it.
Please. And anybody. So you got stuff on people, send it to us. We love that.
Bring it on. Hobbits Glen,
yes. And this is, I like this. I'm very excited about this. You know, I've been pretty critical of CA over the years. But I've got to say, Phil Nelson's, and I don't know how much it's him, but the organization.
He's kicking it up.
Yeah, he's kicking it up. The organization has kind of moved into a different gear. And as evidenced by at Hobbits Glen, in the past, boards or the organization would have probably gone for the cheap alternative, put a Band-Aid on Hobbits Glen, and, you know, kind of do it as cheaply as possible to move forward. That's not what they did this time. They had the vision of saying, you know, it's a great golf course, it's a great asset for the community, and they're going to put money into the asset and build a new $6 million clubhouse, the clubhouse it really should have.
Exactly. Because if you look at other CA facilities like the Columbia Gym or the Athletic Club, Supreme Sports, and all of those pools, they are always kept very up-to-date and modern. And that golf course clubhouse smells.
Well, you have to remember, you know, I mean, let's go back to the clubhouse.
Assuming you're not referring to the burgers coming out of Coho Grill.
No, I am referring to the sewer smell, the musty smells, the disgusting smells of that building. That building has been a stepchild because people for some reason think that golfers are somehow elitists and they're just trying to get CA to pay for everything. And they don't consider the fact that having a championship golf course with the clubhouse to match is a benefit to the entire community.
And let's not forget the seniors tour was there.
The senior tour was there
10 years ago, maybe
10 or 15 years ago for 3 years.
It's a great course. I mean,
it's a wonderful course. The course itself is in fabulous condition.
It is.
And the clubhouse is an embarrassment.
And here's the thing.
How do you really feel, John?
What people don't remember, though, and I do, is that clubhouse was built by the Rouse Company and then kind of given to CA or sold to CA. As part of the, you know, remember Columbia back then was pre-servicing everything. So Rouse would build it and then kind of give the
consistent debt. Consistent with their vision.
Yeah, and then give the debt to CA. But they, money was a little tight. They didn't spend the money on that clubhouse initially. And it's over 40 years old. They did it on the cheap.
They're putting $6 million into that thing now. That's going
to
be nice.
It needed to be replaced. You know, putting a patch on that was not going to help. I mean, the systems were old. It really is one you got to scrape and rebuild, and that's what they're doing. The designs are wonderful. Columbia Patch had some nice pictures. If people haven't seen them, that's a good place to go. But I'm excited about it. So, and while we're on talks with CA, before I get too far, they are our sponsor.
They are, and we thank them for that.
And here's the dirt on CA this week. My producer just laughed because it's all about CA wants you to test your soil. If you live in Columbia and you have a lawn, you should test your soil to find out, before you put anything on it, to see if it needs anything. And this is one of my pet peeves. People don't... I think some people should go to Homeowners 101 before they have a single-family house. Yes. People move into homes and they have no idea what they're doing. They go to Home Depot and listen to some guy for 5 minutes. They think they understand how to fertilize their lawn. They come back, over-fertilize it. There's at least two lawns in our neighborhood that have brown spots all over them from people that just put way too much fertilizer down, put it at the wrong time of the year. And what it's not only bad for the lawn, but that stuff goes into our watershed. And CA has this new guy, John McCoy, who's in charge of Waterhead, doing a great job.
He's been on our show.
Yeah, he's been on our show. And he has now made it through his department. He's made available for free soil sample kits for anybody in the community who wants them. Go to their village association office, get a free soil sample kit, test your soil, find out what it needs before you put anything on. That's a great, it's another, stepping up the game, doing a good job.
You know what, it's being really proactive.
Well, it is.
Kudos to them on that one.
Very, very good. Sorry. So,
you know, we have spent almost 3 years now doing the show, I think, something like that.
Something like that.
We've interviewed a lot of people,
yes.
And we're very blessed to have some very well-known guests and politicians. And one of the cool things that we have done over the years, and we're doing more and more of, is having ordinary people on the show that are doing extraordinary things in our community.
And you can't get any more ordinary than Joan Lankos.
Nor can you get any more extraordinary. I mean, when you look at the things that Joan's been involved with, kudos to her. I mean,
really,
a lot of cool things in this community. Joan, welcome.
Thank you.
Community
advocate.
Community advocate,
yes. Let's talk about the word activist, because I kind of agree with you. It has sort of a negative undertone.
It has a 60s tone to it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I have always only done things because I wanted to make the community better, because I was interested, and I just wanted to do my part to help out. So
you've always kind of been a cheerleader, too.
I started out as a cheerleader, actually.
Nicely done.
I started out as a cheerleader at Mount St. Joe's.
You're Mount St. Joe's.
And, in fact...
Now, wasn't that a boys' school?
That's an all-boys school. I attended Archbishop Keough High School. I was in the third graduating class from Archbishop Keough, which is now Seton Keough.
Well, that makes you 37.
We joined up with our arch rival, exactly. And
now, Cardinal Gibbons was next to Keough.
Cardinal Gibbons was next to Keough.
So how come you weren't a cheerleader for them?
Some other girls cheered for Cardinal Gibbons. I cheered
like
for Mount St. Joe.
There?
Oh, you betcha.
Okay.
Oh, you betcha.
Were you the cool ones?
Go Gales. You betcha.
Go Gales.
But, in fact,
Who had the cuter guys, Cardinal Gibbons or Mount St. Joe?
Oh, St. Joe, no question.
That'll get a call.
But the first game I cheered at was actually a preseason game, and it was way out in the boonies. I had no idea where it was, because I grew up in Pikesville. And the first game I cheered at, we show up over there, and we get out of the car, and I have no idea where we are. I find out later, when I moved to Columbia, that it was actually cheering at Athelton High School.
Home of the Raiders.
Home of the Raiders, where all three of my children graduated from.
No kidding. All three of them graduated from the high school in the boonies.
And the high school in the boonies. Which is no longer in the boonies. Actually, our first home in Columbia was directly across the street from that school in the boonies.
Yeah, Columbia kind of ate the Athelton neighborhood, you know, Village of Hickory Ridge.
The Village of Hickory Ridge ate the Athelton neighborhood.
And you are actually a staff member of the village, correct?
Yes, I have two completely different hats. One, I am the special events coordinator. That's what I was originally hired for. I'm the party girl. I'm planning a senior lunch next week.
Party girl.
Cheerleading days, too.
Cheerleading days, you betcha. And
showed him how cool guys
those boys at St. Joe.
So,
by the way, Catholic boys lie. Do you know that?
I think that's actually when I was talking to my daughters as young women, I told them that all boys lie.
It's probably good advice. That's what I've told my daughter.
So, I did various party planning. I do a 50s lunch, a family night bingo, a shredding event. We did a neighborhood cleanup the other week. All kinds of fun things like that. And while I was there, issues would come up that were related to land use. And I spent 10 years on the county planning board, again, just because I'm interested in land use.
10 years on the planning board?
I was on the planning board from 1992 to 2002.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. I was actually term limited on it at the
Bless
same
you.
Time. And so the manager at the time, Jane Parrish, who retired this past fall after 31 years, would ask me, who do I call the county about this, or how do I do this? And I just started doing more and more of the land use issues.
Wow.
And Hickory Ridge is unique in that we have a lot of out parcels.
We do have a lot of out parcels.
Out
on the edge
parcels,
of Columbia.
Such an evil. In that we have pockets of land that were not part of the original development.
Right.
And as they have developed, there's other issues that come on.
And how they relate to the rest of the village.
And how they relate to the rest of the village, where we're allowed to do things, or their zoning allows them to do things that we couldn't do.
Right.
So I started following other cases that might affect the village and explaining them to the village board in simple language. And so they decided that they wanted me to do that for them on an official basis, and they created the title of Land Use Liaison.
Oh.
So that's my other
that's
hat
other
that
title.
I wear.
Wow. Well, going back to special events, before we go too far, I want to make sure we talk about this. You have one coming up.
Yes. The 10 Villages of Columbia do several joint events each year, and this is the third year that we are doing the Columbia Home Tour. And it is my responsibility, as far as part of a group committee of the villages, to find the actual homes. It's my job to go out and convince five families to let 400 people come through their house on a Sunday afternoon.
Because, let's go back, there's 10 villages.
There's 10 villages.
But there'll be five homes on the tour because they
Well, what we try to do is get, you know, one or two homes from each village, and that's what we've done in the past years. We also will feature one of the village facilities. This year we're featuring Claret Hall in River Hill.
Ah.
We have two homes in River Hill this year. We have one in Oakland Mills. We have one in King's Contrivance. And we have a condo right at the Watermark here in Wild Lake.
Oh, that'd be fun. So you get these people to open up their homes.
Yes, and I try to get a range of homes. I want to get, this year, as I said, we have
a condo, a townhouse.
We have a townhouse.
We understand you have a local blogger who's participating.
Yes, and that's actually kind of exciting because most of the homes we get are people who have their kids are already gone,
yeah.
And they've spent years, you know, living here and there and everywhere and have fabulous collections of things from around the world.
The house and
all kinds of wonderful things. But one of the homes on the tour this year is a first home for a young couple, Trevor Green.
Dr. Trevor Green,
who is a local blogger, Hoco Politico.
You're thinking of Hoco Polipso,
which is the Poetry and Literature Society, but he and his wife, Debbie, have graciously opened their home to us. We have another home in River Hill, which we're referring to as the Tuscan Castle, which is...
it's a big house.
It's a big house, backs to the middle Patuxent. My favorite part was when I went down the stairs to the basement, I was greeted by a suit of armor. One of the bedrooms on the lower level, we call the Queen's Bedroom, has gold leaf ceiling.
All right, so, Jim, I got to stop you for a second. So walk me through...
Why would people want to do this?
No, I think going and seeing it is cool. But here's what I'm trying to figure out. You decide we have, you know, upwards of 300,000 people in Howard County, and you decide you're going to go find five homes.
How do I do it?
Do you just start knocking on doors and saying, hey, can I check out your master bedroom? I mean, you know.
Actually...
In a minute.
And actually, kind of like that. When we know what villages we sort of want to concentrate on, we ask the village managers and the staff of those villages to give us some suggestions.
Of neighborhoods or of associations?
Do you know
homes?
A great house?
Right.
Okay. That's how the two homes I just described in River Hill, the one was, you got to go look at this street. And I drove up that street and I'm like, oh my God, I have to have that house. I actually tried to get that house and the one next door, which is also a custom home, but I was only able to get the one. And then Trevor had previously been on the village board up there, and they said, try Trevor. They gave me a couple of names of people. I drove by the houses, and depending upon the mix of homes that I've already committed to and trying to get different villages,
right,
and different kinds of homes, you know, then I'll approach one. And if I don't know the person, you know, if I know them, I might call them or have somebody call them. If I don't know them, I will send them a letter. I literally cold call them and say...
So you do.
I mean, that's how I got the house.
And what do they get for this?
They get our thanks.
They get our thanks. Right. So it's voluntary.
But it's voluntary.
Now, do they stay in the house while people come up?
We encourage them to, but not they don't always do that. But we encourage them to stay in the house because people want to hear about this fabulous piece that they've
How would you feel about that? People walk through and look at your stuff and people...
Well, yeah, I don't think so.
Don't go in there.
You don't want to see my stuff.
Don't walk in that door.
But the interesting thing is, this year, one of the homes, the person actually came to us and said, she wanted to be on last year. She came and said, I've heard about it. I think this is really exciting. I'd like to volunteer my home.
I love my home.
Now, what
I
happens?
Love how I decorate my home. You need to come see it.
I know. But let's wait right there. So you get this, and you go see it, and you go, oh, my God. How do you gently let that person down saying, has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, wow, that's really interesting. That you would combine this and combine that. Boy, this is really interesting. I'm going to keep this on my list. I have a lot of other homes to look at, and I'll get back to you.
You know, quick aside, my parents were born in Europe, and my mom grew up, you know, cooking Eastern European food and whatever. Right. And she came to America and had people over for dinner, and that was the classic line. She'd make something, and they'd be like, this is interesting. And she learned over time that that was code for this sucks.
This sucks.
I don't like this.
Interesting's not good.
So it was. It has been fun finding these different homes, and there's always a little panic. Am I going to get the final one? Am I going to get this? Am I going to get that? Because I have to have those people commit to the home in November.
Oh, is that right?
Which oftentimes,
really?
Yes.
That seems like a long time. This thing is in June.
It's in June. It's June the 3rd. The
and
first Sunday in
commit,
June.
You have to commit.
I have to have them to commit by end of November, early December.
Why so early?
Because by January, we are selling advertising for our program, and the time framing of getting that, we have an artist go out and actually do a drawing of the home, which then gets put in our...
They do a drawing?
They do a drawing of
really?
The home, which gets put in which gets put in the booklet. And then the time length that we need to get accomplish everything, we have to do that. So what happens is, we had this last year. I had a woman, committed to her house and everything, and we go in November, okay, we're done deal. We go back in May for the docent training at that particular house. The people that are going to be welcoming the guests at that house go ahead of time to see the house.
They're the ones who say don't go in that room?
Exactly. Yeah. And I looked at her bathroom. I said, Phyllis, is this the same? Oh, no, I had the bathroom redone.
Somebody, I don't like your new bathroom. Can you bring back the old one?
Somebody else, somebody
else. You can't
else,
do that without telling us.
completely replaced all the white carpeting in their whole house 2 years ago in order to, because they, the people just, all those projects that you put off,
right.
I'm going to get to them,
Can you see that conversation between a husband and wife? Honey, we were selected for this honor. I'm thinking we ought to redo the house a little bit. Isn't that a great excuse? So when is this? Can people learn more about this?
It is June 3rd.
Okay.
And it's for 11 to 5 on June 3rd. You can buy tickets at each one of your village community offices.
And how much is the ticket?
The ticket is $20. If you wait till the day of, you can buy it at Claret Hall, but the ticket will be $25 that day.
All right.
By the way,
is there a limited amount?
There are 400 tickets to be sold.
Okay. Per house or do people?
All together, 400 tickets.
Okay.
And then you can select your direction that you want to take.
Have you ever sold out before?
No. We have not. We look forward to doing so. We've stretched out our advertising this year. We have a web page, our Facebook page, which is Columbia Home Tour 2012, or our website is www.columbiahometour.org.
Okay.
And you can find out more information about our site. Tickets are on sale. Yesterday, there was an ad in the flyer with a $5 off coupon. So if you go to the, you cut that out.
$15.
And you can get those tickets for $15 a piece. The proceeds go to Bridges for Housing Stability, a local charity. We always do a housing charity in Howard County, kind of a nice tie-in.
Yeah.
But we're trying to feature our people will show up in a village and think, I never knew this neighborhood was here.
Wow.
We want to stretch people's ideas beyond
what
the
Columbia
mall
is.
And their immediate neighborhood.
Very cool.
We don't want to belabor this, but there's some other things we want to cover. But so this homeowner who agrees to have their house done, they have a plaque they put on their house or anything afterwards?
We give them that architectural drawing
is
done of their home. We frame it and we give that to them as a thank you gift.
And then no CPRA for a year?
Sorry. But we have some great houses this year. I really hope people... come out and enjoy.
I think you've done, from what I've heard, you have great houses every year. So let's get some other things up.
All right. I want to jump to the land use junkie side of you.
Okay.
Okay. We've had a lot of discussions on the show about the state of land use in Howard County and property rights and things like that. So I'm just going to throw you kind of a very high level and then we can get into specifics. What do you perceive the state of land and land use in Howard County to be today?
Well, number one, we're not going to get any more land in Howard County.
Stop making it.
So we have to use what we have wisely. And I just served on the General Plan Task Force, and 10 years ago I was on the planning board when the 2000 General Plan was completed. And we started things with the 2000 General Plan, and we're going to continue them now to make sure that the areas that we have that already have water and sewer, that already have development, that already have a road transportation network, that's where we need to concentrate development. We're going to have thousands more people coming into Howard County in the next few years. We can't put everybody out. People want to move out to the western part of the county, but when they move there, then they want, there's the grocery store is a 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
And, we need to recognize that
Denise used to live out in Glenwood. She goes, we're 20 minutes from everything.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
You live out. You're 20 minutes from everything from your house.
I'm a mile and a half from everything. Yeah. I love living close to the mall, close to my job, close to where I work. My husband has luckily had a job for the past 35 years where he's commuted 10 minutes here in Columbia. This is what people should be doing.
There's been a lot of land use things for you to talk about. You were heavily involved with the Town Center redevelopment program.
I monitor that development for the on behalf of the
village board. Uh-huh.
And then I've kept close on it. I've gone to additional ones.
Did you consult with Alan Klein at all? Liz?
I did not. In fact, no, I did not consult with either of them on the plan.
I should say, were you Mary Kay's campaign manager?
Mary Kay and I Mary Kay and I knew each other from PTA.
Okay.
And Ellen Giles. Uh-huh. And back in 2002, Mary Kay and I both ran.
Yeah, you ran against her, right?
You ran against County Executive Ullman, right?
Well, Mary Kay ran against County Executive Ullman and lost by 36 votes in the primary, and then I ran against him in the general election.
That was the big controversy that year when Roby endorsed him before the primary, wasn't it? Endorsed Ken before? There was. It got a little ugly there.
It could have been. There's been a few ugly times lately in Howard County politics, but...
The Democrats, though, that's what they do.
Since that time, one or the other of my two good friends, Mary Kay Sigity or Ellen Flynn Giles, has run for office. So every 2 years, I'm standing at a poll for somebody.
Wow.
I'm never anybody's campaign manager. I am Ellen Flynn Giles' campaign treasurer.
Oh.
There you go. Different officer.
Yeah, different officer. Okay.
All right, so going back to sort of land use in Howard County. So we've talked about, because we're running out of lots, here you have some people that, you know, want to be able to develop their land. They want to be able to put, you know, cell towers up on their land.
Intermodal terminals.
Intermodal terminals. I feel like there's, with less and less land available, the tensions have grown. The Clarksville development, what do you attribute that tension to? Is it, in fact, you think, the fact that we're running out of land?
I actually don't see it as being any worse today than it always has been. There's always been that not my backyard.
Yeah.
Chuck Ecker used to have a
bananas.
Great saying, bananas, yeah, build absolutely nothing anywhere near anybody.
I love that one.
That was always my favorite.
He's got a whole list of them. You've ever heard Chuck go on with that?
Yeah.
I miss Chuck, too.
I think that people are interested in development when it's happening next door. And otherwise, well, whatever, you know, or there'll be some vague comment about, oh, there's traffic. Well, guess what? If you live in a city, there's traffic.
They only pay attention when it's down the street from them.
Yes.
Yeah. Or next door.
Let me kind of press a little further on the whole Clarksville project and the development near Kendall's.
Okay.
Yeah, the great Kendall debacle.
That whole parcel.
The Greenstone Ventures.
Greenstone Ventures and how they couldn't work out an easement. And
don't you feel like somebody didn't do all their homework before they, you know, before...
Ooh, there's a statement.
I just feel like somebody, you know, forgot to do something somewhere that
George and Holly Stone, maybe, you think?
I don't know who, but it just seems to me that...
You're saying when they bid on that site, when they bid on the old school site, they should have known what the easements were.
I'm saying that yes, and
that's part of your due diligence.
And what makes sense as far as traffic patterns.
Right.
Something that makes me crazy in Howard County is you can't get there from here.
You can see it, but you can't get to it.
Exactly. That you will have a road that comes to it, you know, an obviously dead end that should be connected at some point, and the community will come forward and say, no.
Don't open that road up. Right.
Don't do that. And I'm surprised the fire department doesn't complain more about the fact that there's not two means of egress, ingress and egress to those properties. It's.
We saw that recently with the Duragan Manor.
With Duragan Manor, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we saw it down with Maple Lawn when that development was being first done. I saw that when I was on the planning board. And if you don't make logical connections beyond one way to get there from here...
It creates traffic problems.
It creates traffic problems. You should be a traffic engineer.
No, I'm just a developer.
So all politics are local, you know?
Yes.
Have you found, and land use is always sort of at the epicenter of political debate, has it gotten worse? I mean,
you're trying to get me to say something that
no, I'm really not. I just don't think
it's gotten worse.
You've been around for a lot of years.
I think we do a nice job of separating responsibilities. I think we have an elected body that sets the zoning for a community, and particularly in Columbia, the fact that we then have the appointed body of the planning board to make sure that the decisions that were made by that elected body can move forward in an, you know, once the decision is made, in a rational form. If every decision, you know, from does that building get to be built next door or something, was made by an elected body, it would be gridlock, because there, you'd always wonder, you know,
right.
and there's always the accusation that you're in somebody's pocket or somebody's not. And I think you guys will agree that that just doesn't happen in Howard County, that there aren't people in people's pockets.
No. No.
As much as you'd want to think so, that
well,
doesn't
Brian Meskin was in Steve Adler's pocket, but that's a different thing.
Steve seems to think
the courts will decide. On that note.
All right, so I'm not going to bait you into having this conversation, I see. You're not quite the political junkie that I had you.
It's a small town.
All right, let's go to town center. You frustrated with the speed with which it's...
Yes.
Developing.
Yes, and I mean, I finally feel like we're starting to get some traction. That, you know, the first final development plan for the area surrounding the mall was approved, and the greatest line that anybody said at that planning board meeting was when Josh Zucker, planning board member, said, "We're creating a new reality."
Yeah.
And that's what people don't always realize. They'll testify and they say, "Well, this isn't going to work because the road's not going to do it." Well, yeah, except instead you're going to have the road that goes this way, and people are going to park over here, right. And things are going to be different. The reality will not be the reality that you have today.
I like that. We're creating a new reality.
That's exactly what we're doing.
All right. I know one last thing we wanted to talk about with you was the redevelopment of Wild Lake and the village centers in general. You have some opinions about that.
Well, it took a really long time for Wild Lake to get where they're going. To get going in the right direction. I think that's going to be a slight little hiccup in a positive way with the closing of the KFC.
Yeah, the old Jack in the Box.
Yeah, I remember the Jack in the Box.
Good old days.
It was Columbia's first fast food restaurant.
Was it really?
Yeah, they should be preserved. They should not tear that down.
You know, that was part of Ross's vision. Yeah, we need to keep that building
in its current
format.
Keep Columbia's first fast food restaurant.
Our local deity, Jim Rouse, once again gets
named. I need to bury that. I need to be done with this.
Most of the villages are doing something on creating their own village center community plans. Hickory Ridge, we did ours. We don't see anything critical happening, except the fact that in Hickory Ridge we have a lot of out parcels surrounding our center, and how
we had the whole thing of the drugstore on the corner.
And we were against that, but we've actually met with the owners of several of the undeveloped parcels near our village center, and we're all kind of on the same page. We're working together to make sure that we get something to preserve the
compliments.
Exactly.
It has the right connectivities to it. That's right.
Exactly. But as I said, pretty much all the village centers, all the villages that have village centers, except for Dorsey, are working on making sure that their centers remain viable. Dorsey is different because their zoning is different. They're not under the new town zoning.
Right. I know, that's a little weird.
There's a lot of anomalies like that unless you are a land use junkie, you wouldn't know about.
Well, Joan, we're running to the end of people's tolerance for listening to us every other week. So, in other words, the end of the show. But we liked it. This was interesting. Thanks for coming by. I mean,
thanks.
I learned a couple things today. Paul, anything left to say?
No. Joan, thank you for coming. We appreciate it. And if Ken Ullman was here, he would want us to thank you for all that you do for Howard County.
Thank you.
I don't know where that came from, but I liked it.
Ken is always very good at thanking people for their contributions to the community.
Well, he is. And on that note,
that's all I'm saying.
I was the second best candidate that year.
That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on May 18th with local author and entrepreneur Rich Madzell, along with another 40 minutes of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you join us.